Welcome to the Self-Defined Human Podcast. This is your host, Michael Corman. This is the second time doing this episode because the first time it went in a direction I didn't really want it to go in. And I don't want to publish that one. So we're going to try this again. I'm going to talk about loneliness and social anxiety. That's the topic for today. I put out a question on my Instagram story asking for topics to make a podcast about. If you're not following me on Instagram, my username is no.michael.here. No Michael here. No.michael.here. So you can follow me. And then in my stories on Instagram, I post a lot of stuff. That's where I tend to like test out a lot of my ideas before doing anything else with them. So that's the, if you want like the most like current up-to-date Michael Corman reality show, that's where it is in my Instagram stories. So we're talking about, somebody said, well, loneliness. Okay, so I'm going to talk about loneliness. Loneliness. You know, what's the deal with loneliness? Is loneliness a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Well, it's a thing, okay? So, you know, people, like human beings, you know, we're social creatures, so we like to live with other people. We like to have other people around us. We don't like to be hermits in a cave. And so if you want, you know, great spiritual development, then you should live in a cave because you'll learn a lot about yourself. I think I've never lived in a cave, but I've done silent meditation retreats where there is a lot more seclusion and isolation than what we normally experience. And it's true that you do learn a lot about yourself. So I imagine living in a cave would take that to the next level, but I haven't tried it. So what we're doing here is we're just gonna talk about loneliness in a more conventional sense, you know, not this great, like, you know, what happens if you remove all social contact, all stimulation of any kind? You know, if you go into one of these sensory deprivation tanks, you're gonna learn a lot too. You know, because when you have stimulation, when you have interactions with the environment, you end up learning, you end up blocking things out because the environment will stimulate you and then it will activate certain patterns, certain nervous system patterns that will make it hard to perceive what's going on. Because you just like, you just start running these programs and you just go with the program. You just go with the flow. But when you have that isolation, then other things happen. Loneliness. You know, that's kind of what we call this feeling when you don't have people around you, is loneliness. And we tend to think of it as being this bad thing. You know, I feel lonely. Well, you know, let's talk about why that is. Why is it a bad thing? You know, well, if you have some compulsion, you know, you have this like need that's not being met. This need for social contact that's not being met. So here we are in July of 2021. So this is the tail end of the COVID-19 pandemic. Maybe, we'll see. And so there's been a lot of isolation, certainly on my part, okay? It's been a ton of isolation. So I'm like a hermit now, okay? Like I don't talk to people, hardly ever. You know, once a week maybe. And, you know, I've gone a little crazy. And you can tell how crazy I am by looking at my social media accounts. You can see exactly how crazy I've gone. Loneliness is, it's a thing. You know, if you have this idea that you know, everybody's different, okay? Like, everybody is different. So the question, you know, the topic that came into my Instagram story was loneliness, but there was no question attached to that. So I wish I had a question because then there'd be something to answer, but there's no question. It's just a topic. So it's just, Michael, here, talk about loneliness. 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 It's like the Lone Ranger. You know, it's like, loneliness. It's like The Gunslinger by Stephen King. It's just this guy walking through the desert all by himself. See, he must have been lonely. You know, there's a lot of tortured heroes like that, that are lonely. They have nobody, like, there's nobody that ever gets close to them. There's nobody that they can relate to. Nobody who can relate to them. You know, they see Jesus walk this lonesome valley. It's a song. It's a spiritual. I'm not allowed to sing it because I'm white. White people can't sing spirituals anymore. I wonder if we're allowed to listen to them. I haven't checked the rule book on that one. I just saw a Black Lives Matter sign just as I said that on the side of the road. So I guess that's a sign. I guess that means I'm not allowed to listen to them. Okay. That kind of sucks because I like spirituals. You know, when I say spirituals, for those in my audience that are not from the United States, maybe you don't know what spirituals are. Maybe you do. I don't know. But it's black music. From the time of slavery, black people would, you know, they... I just saw a black guy. Look at that. Just as I was saying that. What's going on today? Black people sang these spirituals, okay? And that's the music that they came up with. You know, maybe some of it was coded language. You know, on the Underground Railroad. Underground Railroad. As they were escaping to freedom. I used to think the Underground Railroad was a real railroad. I used to think the Underground Railroad was a real railroad. But it wasn't. It wasn't. It was just a metaphor. It was just this, I don't know the details of it. You're gonna have to look that up. There was Harriet Tubman. She was a conductor on the Underground Railroad. Conductor is normally the person that drives the train, but she wasn't driving a train. I thought she was. That's what I thought when I was a kid. But it just meant that she would help the slaves escape. You know, she would orchestrate the escape plans, help them along the way, you know, as they got from one safe house to the next. So, where was I going with that? That's a spiritual, okay? And, you know, when people are isolated, they get lonely. But see, loneliness is where, you know, there's creativity that can come from that, because when you don't have social contact, then what do you have? You have nothing. You have a lot of free time. You know, and you have a need for stimulation. So you can invent your own stimulation. See, that's where the spirituals came from, you know, because they were isolated. They just had to work in the fields all day. They couldn't go out and party and listen to music that other people wrote, so they had to make their own music. So loneliness, you know, all the great artists, all the great thinkers, all the great writers, all the great scientists, they came up with their best ideas when they were in isolation. You can't really come up with good ideas when you're around other people. So this is me singing the praises of loneliness. But I want to also talk about social anxiety a little bit, because, you know, that's the other side of this. You know, when you're afraid of other people, you're afraid of social contact. And that's something we learn as a little kid. We learn to be afraid of other people. See, all the anxiety disorders are all the same. You got social anxiety disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder. All these things, they're all the same. And it is all just fear of the unknown. You know, there's something, there's just this unknown, this void, this open space where you don't know what's going to happen if you have to make contact with it. You have no idea. So you're afraid of it. And what you do is you take all that fear and you target it at a specific object. And you say, that object, that's what's responsible for my fear. Sometimes you don't even go that far. You don't even know you're afraid. You just say, that object is bad. I need to stay away from that. You know, so if you target that at social interaction, then you will say that you have social anxiety. If you target it at snakes, then you'll say you have a fear of snakes. If you target it at dirty ovens, then you'll have obsessive compulsive disorder, and you'll have this compulsion to clean ovens. I knew somebody who had a compulsion to clean ovens. That's why I thought of that one. I mean, I don't know why you would want to clean ovens. I like cleaning tables. I like cleaning flat surfaces. You know, where you just like spray something on and then wipe it off. That's a lot of fun. I like cleaning windows. You know? Obsessive compulsive disorder. Social anxiety disorder. So why are we afraid of other people? Well, the thing is that people are judgmental. Why does it matter if people are judgmental? Well, the thing is that human beings are social animals, okay? So we grow up surrounded by other people. And we get this sense of safety from the group. And when we're little babies, that's very rational. I mean, we don't do it rationally, but it is rational when you think about it, because little babies are defenseless. So they have to have the protection of other people. And now some animals do that, but they kind of grow out of it. You know, they become more independent as they get older. But human beings don't really become independent. So we take that fear of being alone, that fear of social rejection, we take that throughout our whole lives. And it's a fear, you know, the fear of social rejection is a fear of death. Because it's a fear of being in the wilderness, all alone, with nobody to protect you. You know, you're just kind of there, fending for yourself. In the wilderness, in the desert, in the forest. There's nobody there except you. And that's what happens, you know, when the group rejects you. When the group kicks you out. I was going to say the tribe, but I'm not allowed to say that. Because I'm white. I can't talk about tribes. Which is just kind of bizarre, because I think tribe is, I mean, that's a pretty standard word. But, you know, cultural appropriation, social justice police are going to be at my door if I say tribe, go ahead, I dare you. You know, human beings lived in tribes for like thousands of years. And these are my ancestors I'm talking about. I'm not allowed to talk about my own ancestors. It's cultural appropriation. Okay. Fine. So when we are adults, we are still afraid of rejection, because rejection is what we learned as kids. We learned that rejection means that you're no good and means that you're not acceptable. You're not acceptable to the group, to the tribe. Ha, there I said it. Ooh, what are you going to do about it? And if that's what you're afraid of, you know, you're going to be really afraid of disapproval. And that means, you know, you're going to be afraid of putting yourself out there. You're going to be afraid of putting your work out there. You're going to be afraid of talking to strangers. You're going to be afraid of, you know, getting on stage. You're going to be afraid of anything where you are subject to that sort of evaluation, because you learn to equate the evaluation with the being ostracized, being exiled from the community, being out in the desert, in the woods, alone, by yourself. And that means death. It means certainly total uncertainty. You know, do you know how to fend for yourself in the desert, in the woods? Do you know how to do that? Like, could you, if you were to just, you know, be dropped on a desert island, could you survive? Like, would you have any clue what to do? You know, probably not. You know, maybe you would. Maybe you know a couple things. But you'd be in big trouble anyway. I mean, even if you knew stuff, like, you'd still be in big trouble, right? I mean, like, how long are you really going to survive for in the wilderness? When there's no, like, it's not like you're, like, hiking in the woods. It's not like you're on a camping trip where, you know, you can stock up before you go, and then you have all these supplies, and then, you know, you get enough supplies to last you however long your trip is, and then you come home. Like, this is like, okay, you're going to, even if you bring some supplies, like, you're going to run out of supplies eventually. And then what? You can't go to Walmart and get more supplies because you're on a desert island. So you're going to have to make your own supplies or do without supplies. Do you know how to make supplies out of the trees and the rocks and the flowers and the dirt? Like, you know how to make supplies out of that? I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah. Who knows? Who knows? I always wonder about, like, how do people sleep? Like, you know, we have these beds nowadays that are pretty comfortable. I mean, we've got pillows, we've got mattresses, we have blankets. Like, what do you do when you're out in the wilderness? Like, what do you sleep on? Like, if you don't have a sleeping bag. I heard that the ancient Egyptians slept on pillows made of stone. Is that true? Somebody needs to fact check this. I can't imagine sleeping on a pillow made of stone. Although sometimes I do lie down on the floor, on the hard floor, on my back. I actually have fallen asleep that way. I don't know if I could sleep the whole night like that. But I have fallen asleep. Sometimes when I do yoga late at night, I fall asleep afterwards. So the thing with social anxiety is that, yeah, okay, in the past, it was a problem. It's not as big a problem today. That's the thing you gotta realize. It's not as big a problem. Okay, like, being rejected from the group is not a death sentence today, the way it used to be, necessarily. Now, look, it depends on what group we're talking about. You know, if you're in Soviet Russia, maybe it is. Maybe it's not good to be rejected by the group. I'm assuming that you're living in a relatively free society where if you're rejected from the group, you do have the possibility of just finding another group. But either way, no matter what your surroundings are, the fact is that the fear of the unknown is always the real problem. You know, Mr. Miyagi in The Karate Kid said, it's okay to lose to opponent, must never lose to fear. Must never lose to fear. See, that's called trauma, okay, when you lose to fear. Because not only do you lose, you're going to lose every time in the future. Because now you've just taken your behavioral repertoire and you've shrunk it down. Behavioral repertoire is a term that I learned. I think I learned it from Stephen Hayes, psychologist, who is the founder of acceptance and commitment therapy. And so I use that term, behavioral repertoire. You know, it's the set of all the things that you know how to do. Set of, and I don't mean intellectually know how to do, the set of all things that you would do in a given context. I use that term in a piano group. This guy gave me a really hard time about it. No such thing as behavioral repertoire. Like, I don't know. Come on. See, but that's rejection. That's social rejection, you know? I say that thing, I put this out there intending to be helpful and, you know, informative. And what happens? I get somebody rejecting me and inciting a mob against me. Yes, I did get kicked out of the group. I actually don't remember which group that one was. I've been kicked out of 7 piano groups now. So what else is there to say about social anxiety? Did I answer everything? Did I address everything? You know, I don't know. I don't know. I just, you know, it's like when you make a podcast, it's like I try to be entertaining. I want this to be as entertaining as possible. I want this to be like you're listening to it and you're like, wow, Michael is so exciting to listen to. Like, it doesn't even matter if you understand what I'm talking about. All that matters is that it's interesting to listen to me. That's the key. See? It's like listening to Rush Limbaugh. So Rush Limbaugh died recently, I guess. But he was, you know, he was on the radio forever. When I was a little kid, he was on the radio. People loved to listen to him. Even if you hated him, people still loved to listen to him because he was good at talking on the radio. You know, it's just one of those guys like Howard Stern, like they're just good at talking on the radio. They're just good at talking. And it's just, they get into it and they just get this thing going and you just like to listen to it. And you're like, I don't know what this person's really talking about. I'm not really, really following it. Or maybe you kind of are following it, but it's just, you listen to it and then there it is. It's like a piece of music. You know, it's a musical performance when you're talking. When you're talking on the radio, when you're talking on a podcast, it's the same kind of thing. So you have to, like, you have got that rhythm and you have that flow to it. And once that's there, then people like to listen to it and then you can just hook them in and then there they are. That's the kind of thing that I'm trying to do. It's more important to me to do that than it is to impart any specific information. Because really, at the end of the day, who cares about the specific information? You know, it just goes in one ear and out the other anyway. So I want to try some of those things. You know, the problem is that some people are so attached. They're so attached to the language that I use that when I'm just saying something off the cuff, just saying something incidental, you know, just saying something because it just happens to be the words that escape my mouth, then they attach to it so rigidly and they attack me for it and they try to cancel me for it and they try to whatever they do that. But I don't want to hear anything about that. I want to just say things, and then I just say them, and then there they are. So there's a certain kind of flow that I want to find, you know? And if you make the flow the priority, then you can just say whatever. If the flow is the priority, then you can say whatever. See, every single thing is just, it's just when you're singing, it's the same thing. Every time you take a breath, there's a certain flow that goes to it. There's a certain direction that it goes in. Every time you take a breath, so you inhale, and then you exhale, and then you're just speaking as you're exhaling. See, but that all has to be synchronized. It all has to be integrated, and if it's not, then it's going to show. If it's not, you're just going to get stuck on it. But this requires actually a lot of practice because you have to undo habits that you've had from the time you were a little kid. All those habits, all those things, you know, when they say that you hold tension in your body, it's like those are the habits we're talking about here. Because you're not really using your body to do it. You're actually trying to hold most of your body still. You're trying to disconnect from parts of your body so that other parts can do all the work. And that's not really good because it's not integrated. But if you just do one breath at a time, then, and you don't have to worry about anything. You just have to resolve every single tension. Every single moment of suspense has to be resolved. And then you get where you're going. Then you get where you're going. Only then. No other time. And then you can just speak. And it's like you're Abraham Lincoln giving the Gettysburg Address. Who knows how that sounded? We don't have a recording of that. So you can imagine. See, but back then, nobody was on TV. Nobody was on the radio. So what is it? What did it matter? You listen to somebody like that? Did he know how to talk? Did he know how? I mean, he was just talking to a crowd. They didn't have microphones back then. But see, but when you didn't have a microphone, then that meant you actually had to speak loudly so people could hear you. Nowadays, we just speak just in a normal, quiet voice, and we expect people to hear. Because the microphone can just do that. It can just make it happen. It's magic. That's not such a good thing because, you know, if you want to actually make your voice to the point where people can hear it, then you have to actually use your body. You can't do that. You know, if you have the microphone, there's no incentive to do that. There's no incentive to engage your body when you're speaking. Opera singers have this issue. So in opera, traditionally speaking, there's no amplification. There's no artificial amplification with electronic amplification. I corrected myself a couple times because I originally said there's no amplification, but that's not true. Because first of all, the voice itself is amplified, okay? So you've got the spaces inside your body where the voice is resonating. That creates amplification. But then the theater itself is constructed in such a way as to amplify the sound. And then I said no artificial amplification. And then I corrected that one because, you know, there is artificial amplification. I mean, like I said, just the theater is artificial. That's something created by people. It's an artifact. So the theater is, that's the microphone and the speaker of the day. You know, back in the day when they didn't have speakers, they would construct buildings such that they would amplify sound. But now you don't need that. You don't need that at all because you could just wear headphones. You could sit anywhere. You could be outside. And you could feel like you're sitting inside the most perfectly engineered theater. If you close your eyes, you wouldn't notice the difference if you had good headphones. So then I said electronic amplification, and that's more like what I'm trying to get at here. I'm talking about speakers. Those things are outlawed in the world of opera, according to the official rules. Now, if you talk to some people, you'll hear that sometimes they do use them here and there, and they try to hide it. It's a scandal. If that sort of thing is discovered, that would be a scandal because that's considered cheating. It's like when athletes use steroids. Opera singers train to amplify their voices naturally. You know, just using their bodies. They train to sing in such a way that they don't need external electronic assistance. Most people don't know how to do that because we don't live in a world that requires that. Anytime we need to speak loudly, anytime we need to address a crowd, we have microphone. So why do you need to learn to speak loudly? But see, that's a whole thing. It's a whole art that's been lost. People don't know how to do it. We don't learn to do it from when we're little kids. You know, we tell little kids to be quiet. We actually do the opposite. So can you imagine what happens when these little kids, when they get a little older and they want to learn to sing opera? It's a total mess. A total mess. Don't even get me started on it. That's a topic for another episode. That's the kind of thing I want to talk about. That's why I started this whole Instagram thing, you know, blog thing and all that, was to talk about that kind of stuff. I wasn't trying to talk about cancel culture and whatever else I'm talking about. So, that's going to happen one of these days. We're going to talk about technical stuff related to music, maybe. I don't know if I have anybody following me who cares about that. Maybe two people. I don't know. So, I will talk to you next time. I hope you have a good day. I hope you have a good life. I hope you have a good feeling about your destiny. Adios. Hasta la vista. Bye-bye.